Welcome to Women's Voices, a weekly program that will bring you information about various topics relevant to ethnic women of Aotearoa New Zealand by a group of ethnic women. We would like to gratefully acknowledge the financial support of our sponsors, the Office of Ethnic Affairs. Women's Voices will be broadcasted every Thursday night at 8:15 on Planet FM 104.6. We hope to not only provide you with information that can help you in your settlement process, but also to offer you the opportunity of sharing your story with other listeners. I'm Asoka Basnayake, along with my colleague,
Kiran Malapur.
We welcome your feedback, so please let us know how we are doing and what you want us to do in the future. We have an email address and you can email us to let us know of your views on womens.voices@hotmail.com or call or text me on 021-167-7475. We are sure that we will have a very exciting time, so tune in every week on Thursday nights at 8:15 p.m. and join us on air with Women's Voices. We have often spoken about refugees on Women's Voices. As a country that has an obligation to accept a quota of refugees through the United Nations Convention, we New Zealanders are always interested in refugee issues. Today, we want to address issues of a different kind of refugee. Scholars are predicting that as much as 50 million people worldwide will be displaced by 2010 because of rising sea levels, desertification, dried up aquifers, weather-induced flooding and other serious environmental changes. 2010 is only a couple of years ahead. Andrew Sims, who is the policy director of the New Economics Foundation in the UK and the author of a book titled Environmental Refugees, The Case of Recognition, predicts this number. It's frightening. Sims says that these people should be considered environmental refugees and given refugee status under international law. So let's find out a little more about environmental refugees. Kiran, what are your thoughts on environmental refugees?
Global warming, you know, Asoka, that it's been in the news, and Australia's just elected a prime minister who's been elected on the Kyoto, on Australia signing the Kyoto Protocol.
Yes.
And considering that the Pacific is just next door to us, I have a little note here which says from Sean Shen, a PhD candidate in geography from the University of Otago, who's researching into environmental refugees from the Pacific.
All right. How does it affect the Pacific?
In the Pacific, the island of Tuvalu is already facing rising sea levels, and people have been forced to grow their root crops in buckets because the soil is highly saline. They have no potable water, no drinking water. The sea comes into their homes. And it looks like that very soon we'll have the first environmental refugees from the Pacific. Considering that New Zealand is just next door to the Pacific, Aotearoa New Zealand has responded to Tuvalu's plight with a labour scheme that accepts up to 75 Tuvaluans per year to gain permanent residency here. This quota policy is known as the PAC scheme, and it allows nationals from Tonga, Kiribati and Tuvalu to migrate to Aotearoa, New Zealand. But they come in here as migrants, not as refugees.
All right, yes. Because there is no law that would allow any country to bring in environmental refugees, isn't it?
It is. And I think when the countries meet in Bali this year, there is going to be talk about some countries signing up to receive environmental refugees. This means that people coming in from the Pacific to New Zealand probably will have a refugee status, which means that they would get a lot more support.
Yes.
So, yeah. And what does this mean to us, to people here? I mean, we've come from the non-traditional immigrant, I mean, we are non-traditional immigrants, non-English speaking people coming from Asia, Africa,
Latin America,
yes, and whatever. And do you have any information on how changes in the environment and global warming affects our women from those countries, and how we here in New Zealand can relate to that.
Yes, Kiran. Now, there is a lot of talk in print media and on television about global warming, melting ice caps, rising water levels, and also gloomy predictions of an ice age in Europe. Now, global warming, it seems, is only going to happen to us in the industrialized, or the first world, I guess. However, it is those who are the most poor, particularly those in our type of countries, developing nations, who are most vulnerable to the disastrous impact of climatic variation. Now, up to about 3/4 of those living under the poverty line globally are women, and they are the people who are at risk. In addition to poverty, there are also other factors contributing to women's vulnerability to climatic change. Now, women in developing nations are much more reliant on primary resources like water and firewood, and they are far more likely to be involved in the agricultural sector. Both agriculture and primary resources are climatic sensitive. So, changes in global temperatures can result in the losses of crops and water scarcity, and also in flooding. Climatic variation alters the ecosystems in which women make their livelihoods, and this will result in lowered nutrition, lowered income, and also increased workload or displacement.
I was just reading that environment-related displacement is most acute in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, Asia, India, and of course, now that we know, the Pacific. Many of our women here in New Zealand are very need to have social responsibility on, you know, contributing in some way to make the whole global scenario on climate change, you know, a contribution in that. So how do you think we could do that? I've been reading about how we could be more eco-friendly and, mm-hmm. you know, use products that are more sensitive to the environment.
Yes, now actually talking on a very personal level, since I have started doing this program and since we have started addressing environmental issues, I become very conscious about, changing the way I think and do things. Like when I went to buy some cotton buds, I saw these plastic, the ones with the plastic sticks and the cotton buds on wooden sticks. And I opted for the wooden one. There are lots of quick facts we can talk about. Now, going carbon neutral is one. Now, what does this mean? Going carbon neutral means that you made up for the greenhouse gases you produce by investing in climate-friendly projects that reduce carbon dioxide emissions elsewhere. Now, leaving just one computer and a monitor on for a year apparently produces the same amount of greenhouse gas as a car when it travels over 3,000 kilometers. And you can even, if you have a laptop on for a few hours, you can feel the energy generated. Because I sometimes cannot even touch the laptop if it has been on for a few hours.
So not only are you wasting the electricity, but you're also contributing towards the emissions in the atmosphere.
Carbon dioxide, yes. Now, another eco fact. One less weekly journey by car can reduce total carbon output by 5%. And this document also says that New Zealand shoppers use 800 million plastic bags every year, which amounts to 200 per person. So each of us use plastic bags. So if we carry our recyclable supermarket bags to the supermarket, that can, you know, change.
So it's organizing the way you shop, it's organizing the way you travel, it's also organizing your day-to-day life. It means that you need to be a lot more prepared. Like we just stop in at the mall and do the shopping.
Yes.
Sometimes we don't carry those bags with us. So it means that we need to have ways and means of consciously being eco-friendly.
Yes, what I thought of was I will stuff every unused, every unused plastic bag as much as I can, and then put it into a recyclable bag so that when I go next to the supermarket, I can dump it in the recycle bin there. Because I've noticed that places like Food Town have bins for reused plastic bags, and they will recycle them. We can all sort of be a little bit more conscious about what we do. Flushing the toilet accounts for almost 30% of household water use. Installing a low flush toilet or using the 6-liter half flush option on an existing one whenever possible can reduce water use significantly. So these are some of the eco-quick facts. And we also have some hints from the Sustainable Living Program, isn't it?
Yes, we do.
The Sustainable Living Program New Zealand 2006 edition says, lists quite a few energy actions to gain home energy efficiency. It says to reduce energy demands by keeping winter heat inside where it is wanted, avoiding leaks of heat and therefore wasted money.
Did you know that burning beeswax candles cause less emissions into the air than the traditional wax type candles?
Because it's a natural product.
It does not pollute or harm the environment. It burns cleanly and there's better light. And you can get these for $16 a pack from ecopeople.co.nz. That's what this book says. And also that you can pick up a biofilm, 10-liter bin liners, they're biodegradable.
Oh, they look like plastic, but they're biodegradable.
Yeah, you can throw them and they just break down.
Because a plastic bag apparently takes 100 years to break down, while a banana skin takes a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Quite interesting when you stop to think about this, isn't it?
Yes.
And my list says use any fossil carbon fuels like coal, oil or gas that are required as efficiently as possible to minimize carbon dioxide emissions and to get the best value.
And all the time to be aware that our sisters back home are probably, especially the ones under the poverty line like you mentioned, have to travel that much further for their water and for biofuels.
Yes, now, so when we have water on tap, we tend to forget about all this, isn't it?
Yes.
Now, so talking about tap water, there is a hint for people. Now, over a third of New Zealand homes surveyed for the Housing End Use Energy Project had dangerously hot water at the tap, between 60 and 70 degrees centigrade. This was due to the tank thermostat set too high or to faulty thermostats. So if you are using electric or gas water heating, where the water storage cylinder has a thermostat fitted to control heat input, adjust it down to the range of 55 to 60 centigrade, so that water from the hot taps flows at no more than 50 centigrade. It will still be stored hot enough to control bacteria in the water, but is less likely to scald the child's skin or yours at the tap. And then you will need less energy. So if you want really boiling water, you boil the kettle. Now, another hint is that about leaving the house ablaze with lights and perhaps television running in an empty room.
Okay, here I have a little note that says energy saver bulbs drastically reduce lighting bills. They're using around 1/5 of electricity consumed by a traditional bulb. They cost you about between $2 and $4, and they have an average lifespan of 5,000 to 8,000 hours.
I can say not guilty on that count because actually not me. My husband went and replaced most of our bulbs to energy saving some time ago.
Here, there's also a shower timer. You can fix a timer to your shower, which actually saves you minutes, and then you save dollars.
That's what I need in my house for the teenagers. Now, do you need hot water in every clothes wash? Using a cold wash detergent will cut your gas or electric water heating costs. and you need to run the machine only with full loads. Yeah, that's a good one.
So at the end of the day, it boils down to organizing yourself so that you have one day a week when you do your washing and when you have your tub full of clothes.
Yes.
So you save not only on the power and your washing, but also on bills.
Exactly. We take all these things for granted, isn't it?
Yes, we do. And we want things at the, you know, at the end of a switch.
Yes.
Just put on the switch and things are
and
done.
And things are done.
So I think for us, especially for women like us who've come from those kind of countries where women are seriously going through the motions of longer walks for drinking water or for not being able to cook food because of lack of wood.
Firewood. Yes.
We need to be conscious that we are contributing in some way to make their lives easier.
Today we have with us Sean Shen, who is a PhD student at the University of Otago, who is doing some research on environmental refugees. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thank you so much.
Sean, could you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, sure. My name is Sean. I'm from the University of Otago, and I'm currently based at the Auckland University's School of Geography, Geology, and Environmental Science, one of the best in the country as a visiting student. I'm here doing the research field work, and also because Auckland has the largest Pacific island and also immigrant population in the country. Like many other people, I think, in New Zealand, I'm a migrant myself. I was born in Taiwan and grew up educated in Canada, and now I'm in New Zealand for my study and work.
Right. Now, could you tell us a little bit about your research on environmental refugees?
As a geographer, my research interest lies in understanding the dynamic interplay between humans and environment. The current PhD research I'm looking at right now is about people who are forced to move as a result of environmental change. It is estimated that there will be around 150 to 200 million people worldwide become the so-called environmental refugees because of this environmental degradation or because of a natural disaster or the development project, for example, like the construction of a dam. And in the case I'm looking at right now is Tuvalu. Tuvalu is a tiny Pacific island country, the fourth smallest one in the world, and has been suggested to be the first in the world to be submerged because of rising sea levels.
Right. And what have you found?
The environmental refugee issue has been quite a major concern for many parts of the world, and I found a lot of Pacific Island countries that will be affected by the rising sea levels, and they need to find a place to move. And I think we need to change this one. It's not a good answer.
So what are the other places where environmental refugees come from?
We are looking at many parts of the world. For example, in the Pacific Island, we are looking at the Kiribati, Tuvalu, And in the Indian Ocean, we have the Maldives.
And the Maldives.
Just, yeah, the Maldives.
Yes.
So not only the island countries, but also a lot of coastal low-lying areas. For example, we're talking about India, Bangladesh, Vietnam, Thailand, and China, and even like the United States or even the UK or the Netherlands, those low-lying coastal countries will be affected.
Now, how would environmental refugees be a concern to other countries that accept refugees?
Well, environmental refugee would certainly be a major concern for New Zealand, and probably not in the near future, but it's already a major issue here. For example, in New Zealand has a long regard itself as a Pacific Island country, and it has one of the most long-standing links with many Pacific Island countries. And certainly many Pacific Island countries will be affected by this effect of the global climate change and rising sea levels. And we are looking, in the case of Tuvalu, for example, New Zealand is home to around 3,000 Tuvaluans. Tuvaluans are the seventh largest Pacific Island groups in New Zealand. And it's the largest that you can find actually outside of Tuvalu. And many of the Tuvaluan babies I found is actually they are all Kiwi boys or girls because they were born here prior to 2006 and they are all citizens of New Zealand.
The Tuvaluans that you are talking about, Sean,
yeah,
are migrants, aren't they?
The migrants? Yeah, they are migrants.
So do you foresee that we might have Tuvaluans who are refugees in the future?
I think there's a possibility to have quite a lot of Tuvaluan people becoming environmental refugees, even though this term has not been officially recognized by the international community. And New Zealand at this time hasn't really adopted the term of environmental refugees yet, but I do see there's a possibility in the future, if the country is going to be submerged by the rising seas, those people will be affected as the refugees.
And do you think this the whole concept of the environmental refugee is going to be addressed at the Bali conference?
I think that's been a major issue being raised in many places, and also including the United Nations Development Programme. That's one of the major body in the Bali conference just coming up in this week, actually. The UNDP has just released a report on the global climate change. It suggests that about 330 million people worldwide will be affected by the rising sea levels. And again, many, many different parts of the world will be affected.
Now, in Australia, Sean, the new Prime Minister who has come in has pledged that he will work alongside the United Nations on global warming. So do you see Australia and New Zealand taking quite an active part in this, active role in this whole issue?
Australia hasn't been so active in this area as far as I understand, because previously we have the John Howard Prime Minister government in Australia, and he has been being criticized as, you know, more anti-immigration kind of figure in Australia politics.
Yes, exactly.
But since this new leader is being elected as the new Prime Minister in Australia, I do hope and I do see there's a possibility that Australia will actually get more involved in the issue of climate change and do something that's good for the world.
Now, how would you think that your research will be used in New Zealand or anywhere else?
Okay, I guess this is a bit beyond my prediction as to what extent my research will be benefiting or be used by New Zealand. But I do hope that I could contribute to something, the understanding of this emerging issue, and possibly for some kind of policy recommendation. It's quite interesting that the United Nations IPCC 2007 report has suggested something about New Zealand, that the implication for immigration and security here are is poorly understood, and this has posed a great threat to New Zealand's national security in the era of climate change. And I guess one of my work is to present the voices from the Pacific Island communities and the people, the immigrants here, not only from the islands, but also who are already the migrants or the citizens of New Zealand, to have their voice be heard in the policymaking process. And I do think that New Zealand has the obligation of international moral responsibility to look after its neighbors in the Pacific.
Would you like to say anything else before we wind off, Sean?
I guess it's quite important to recognize the fact that the issue of environmental refugees is not only a regional problem in the Pacific, but it's also an international one. And most people are being pushed out of their original homes. It's not because of their personal choice, but because of the environmental change. That is not something caused by themselves, but they actually need to pay the price, and which is really unfair and injustice. So I do think that that this issue is being worldwide a phenomenon, not only in the Pacific, but also, as we have been suggested previously, there's been in Vietnam, 22 million people in Vietnam, 6 million people in China, 6 million in Egypt, and even the U.S., you know, some parts of the U.S. because by the Katrina hurricane, so many people are being forced to leave their homes. And so I guess I'm trying to say is that the global warming issue is not a... It's not something that you can only hear from the TV news or political debate table, but also something that's very close to home and everyone's everyday activities. So think carefully of what you have been doing every day and to reduce the global warming effect.
Very well said, Sean. That's the message we are trying to push through our program. And thank you for being on the show, and also very good luck for your research. We'll be very interested to find out what you discover.
Okay, thank you so much for the interview. Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Okay.
I hope you have found this information useful, and we will cover some more related topics in the not-so-distant future and have more environmental-related programs on Women's Voices. All good things have to come to an end, and that is all our time for today. It was great being with you, and we wish to thank Sean for being with us today. Today's program was produced and brought to you by Asoka Basnayake and
Kiran Malapur.
We wish to thank our sponsors, the Office of Ethnic Affairs, whose assistance we value. Join us next week with Women's Voices. Until then, have a wonderful night.